The sturgeon is a massive fish. It can weigh more than 100 pounds and live for decades, even more than a century. And sturgeon call or stay at home. We're talking about the sturgeon spearing season here on Wisconsin Weekend. The start is just more than 24 hours from now. Thanks for being here with us on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent. And you're part of this discussion about sturgeon spearing. Did you grow up spearing sturgeon with your parents or grandparents? Do you have a memory to share with us about being out on the ice? Maybe you've never participated in the spearing season before. What do you want to know? Call 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Ryan Koenigs is a senior fisheries biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He joins us now to talk sturgeon. Ryan, welcome to the morning show.
Thanks for having me.
You know, we know that in recent years, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and conservation groups have considered lake sturgeon critically threatened, but Wisconsin has this exception. How are the fish doing here?
Wisconsin has the strongest populations of lake sturgeon in North America, and that's really highlighted by our population on the Lake Winnebago system. The Winnebago system is home to one of, if not the strongest populations of lake sturgeon in the world, basically. And also to home of this recreational spear fishery that's the largest recreational harvest of the species around.
And how do we actually know that we have these sorts of numbers here in Wisconsin?
Well, we collect a tremendous amount of data from the populations in Wisconsin, specifically the Winnebago system that I work on. We do a lot of assessment work, and the two most important time periods are in the spawning in the Wolf tributaries to the Winnebago system. We handle around 1,500 fish per spring. And then also we collect a lot of data from the fish that are harvested during the recreational spear fishery. And it's mandatory registration. So the way that we estimate how many fish are out there in the population is we mark fish in the springtime. We know how many males and females we have marked in the population. And then we look to determine or assess which fish are marked versus marked in that spear harvest.
And do we know why the fish are thriving here as opposed to other places?
I think we've just had good management and timely implementation of regulations and protections to protect the populations that are open to harvest, over harvest. And then we've also had great support from our general public and our user group locally on the Winnebago system. The fishing clubs and spears have been very conservation-oriented when it comes to sturgeon and passing and supporting proper regulation and implementation of a sturgeon guard program in the spring to protect these fish during their most vulnerable time period when they're spawning.
What does that sturgeon guard program look like then? How do we protect them? Because sometimes it's hard to put those ideas together, conservation and fishing.
Yeah, so poaching was one of the biggest threats to our lake sturgeon population through the 60s, 70s, and into really the early 80s. These fish migrate great distances in the springtime up these river systems to spawn, and they're very vulnerable to illegal harvest. They're literally spawning right at your feet. So people go down and grab them with their bare hands, or they were snagging these fish while they're migrating up or down the river systems. And the DNR implemented a sturgeon program in the late 1970s to help protect these fish and reduce this illegal activity. The guard program started out as just DNR staff and their families volunteering to work shifts to watch the fish while they were spawning. It was more intended to be a deterrent to that illegal activity. And through time, that guard program grew into one of, if not the biggest citizen-based protection programs for sturgeon in the world. We have hundreds of volunteers each year that sign up for guard shifts to work at a given location to protect these fish from spawning. And the tangible benefits of that guard program are just saving fish from that illegal harvest activity. But the intangible benefits may be even more critical in that the guard program has helped to change some of the local thought process in the local communities and to get people to view sturgeon more of a conservation light than in just these are fish and I want to be able to harvest them for flesh or roe.
Yeah, so it's a mindset switch. We're chatting with Ryan Koenigs, who's a senior fisheries biologist with the Wisconsin DNR. We're talking about sturgeon spearing season, and there's room for you in this discussion. What's your favorite part of sturgeon fishing? Maybe you're new to the event, or maybe you've participated for years, maybe even decades. What's your story about a big catch, or maybe the one that got away? You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Ryan, let's talk numbers. How many licenses have been issued this year in Wisconsin for the spearfishing season?
There are 1,240.
Oh, and I'm sorry, you're breaking up just a little bit. I think you said more than 12,000?
Yes, just over 12,200 licenses.
All right. And I'm sorry about that, Ryan. I think our line is failing us a little bit. 12,248 licenses sold for Lake Winnebago, 473 for the upriver lakes. And let's try one more time to talk with you, Ryan. How does the DNR determine how many licenses to sell each season?
The spear fishery for Lake Winnebago is unlimited to license sales. So anybody that wants to purchase a license can indeed purchase a license. There's a deadline of October 31st of the preceding year. The Upriver Lakes is a limited entry fishery where applicants apply before an August 1st deadline. And then there's a preference point system that's utilized to award 500 permits of those various applicants.
Then how does the DNR determine when the season ends, how many fish can be caught, or how long we should allow people to try to catch them?
Well, the season goes a maximum of 16 days or until any of the preset harvest caps are reached. We have harvest caps that are established for the Winnebago system for juvenile females, adult females, and males. So three different categories. And a portion of those harvest caps are allocated to the Upriver Lakes fishery, and the rest go to the Lake Winnebago fishery. So each day that the spear fishery is open, spears are able to fish from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. And it's mandatory registration of all harvested fish. So those spears that are fortunate enough to get a fish have to bring that fish to a registration station by 2 o'clock of the same day the fish was harvested. At the station, we'll collect length, weight, sex, and reproductive information from all of the fish that are harvested. And then these stations call in their harvest numbers to me at the end of the day. So we tabulate how many juvenile females, adult females, and males were harvested in the two different fish stations. And at the end of the day, we've exceeded 90% of any of those harvest cap categories. There's 24 hours remaining in the fishery, so one more day. If at the end of the day we've exceeded 100% of any of those caps, the fishery is immediately closed. So it's really important with the data that we collect and that we're able to tabulate that in a timely manner so that we can communicate with our spearers of whether or not the fishery is going to remain open or if it's going to close.
And Ryan, we just got a minute left, but we know that we see big sturgeon speared in recent years, including one last year that was 85.5 inches long, weighed 171 pounds. Do we know that there are some record fish out there that could be caught this season?
We've handled these very large fish more regularly in our spring assessments, and we've seen them show up in the harvest in recent years as well. I think that 85.5 inch fish that was harvested last year was just one of several or one of many fish of that size class within the Lake Winnebago system. I think we certainly have fish out there that have the length capacity to break the record. I'm not sure that they have the weight right now. And what I mean by that is the current state record 212-pound fish that was harvested in 2010, that fish was harvested during a time period when we had more consistent year classes of gizzard shad. And gizzard shad are a kind of boom-bust recruitment forage fish within the Winnebago system, and when they experience these very large year classes, they also experience large die-offs during the winter months, and sturgeon opportunistically feed on these better gizzard
all right.
Shad.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll look forward to seeing what happens this year. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Ryan Koenigs is a senior fisheries biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And we're talking sturgeon all hour long here on Wisconsin Weekend, and there's room for you. This is The Morning Show. Thanks for joining us on The Morning Show. The village of Stockbridge, Wisconsin, boasted fewer than 1,500 people in the last census count. That relatively small population does not keep the community from proclaiming it's the sturgeon center of the world. A giant fish with a swooping tail graces the village logo, and it's even prominent on the town's water tower. I'm Keely Voltina, and we're talking sturgeon spearing here on Wisconsin Weekend as it kicks off tomorrow, and you're part of this conversation. Have you speared a sturgeon before? What advice do you have for people new to the sport? Do you want to learn how to spear fish and you're looking for a place to start? Or maybe you're a veteran who has some pointers. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. You could also email your question to ideas@WPR.org. Now let's welcome Jim Pat. He's the president of the Southwest Chapter of Sturgeon for Tomorrow. Jim, thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here. Good to be talking.
Jim, this creature shows up on a water tower. How big of a deal is the sturgeon?
Around the Lake Winnebago system, it's a big deal. People look forward to this all year long.
And you have been spearfishing sturgeon for decades. Take us back to one of those early memories of spearfishing. What do you remember about going out on the ice in those kind of more first years?
Well, there weren't the number of four-wheel drive vehicles or ATVs now. So it was basically a car pulling a shanty and had chains on the wheels and hopefully could get through all the snow to where you wanted to go. And at that time, it was mostly chisels and handsaws that cut your hole in the ice.
All right. And we'll get into a little bit more about what it actually looks like to go out and to spear sturgeon. But we do have a caller who's ready to go. Margo from Madison has a question for us. Hi, Margo.
Hi. My cousin Robbie up in Prince Edward Island has a degree in environmental affairs. He works for the government. He said to me, Margo, don't ever eat sturgeon. It's lived too long, and it's been exposed to too many toxins. I approve of hunting for food, but not hunting for sport if there's no purpose to it. Are people actually eating these sturgeons?
Margo, good question. And I think, Jim, the answer for you is yes, right?
The answer is yes. Yes, some people do not care for it, and they generally give it away to someone who does, but... Every sturgeon I know is eaten by someone, yes.
Okay, so Margo, you know, being concerned about, is this a situation where we have people fishing just for sport and then really, I guess, wasting the animal? How have you ever seen that? Or is that something that goes against the idea for people who spear for sturgeon?
I have never seen that. It doesn't seem to go against the idea. Everything is eaten that I know of, yes. Smoked sturgeon, they make it many different ways.
Yeah, and so what are your favorite ways then to handle sturgeon, to prepare sturgeon for yourself or for people you know?
There's two ways that are my favorite, smoked or make it on a charcoal grill. On the charcoal grill, it's pretty simple. We use a small aluminum baking sheet that you can buy in any store, of course, thin aluminum, and a little bit of butter and salt, and it only takes about 3 minutes to cook them. We slice it into about half-inch pieces, thick pieces.
I'm pretty familiar with how to grill, but I have to admit, I haven't done any smoking. It's kind of intimidating for me. So how do you approach smoking the sturgeon?
Well, to smoke a sturgeon, first you have to make a brine, as you do in most smoking, and you prepare it in probably about 1.5 inch thick pieces, and you smoke it 6 or 8 hours until done. Take it out of the brine, place it in your smoker. Anywhere from 180 to 200 degrees is our preferred temperature, and just make sure you have enough... of the smoking material to make it last. Keep an eye on it.
Right, and not just because of the time frame, but also, you know, sturgeon are big fish. This is not a healthy northern that you've pulled from a lake by any means. You're dealing with a lot of meat at that point. And how do you approach that, especially because, you know, one of your philosophies is not to waste it?
Yes. For the really big fish, which is not that often for the average person, our group, we fillet them. Go down the backbone, so to speak, which is actually cartilage, and take the flesh off of it. The head weighs a lot, the tail and skin and the entrails weigh quite a bit, so you're ending up with less than probably half of what the fish weighs.
And I have to ask then, how can you compare the taste of sturgeon to other things that we may eat?
Oh, goodness. Well, the smoked sturgeon, the smoked sturgeon tastes a lot like many other fish. I don't know if you've ever had catfish or
okay.
not. That is the closest I would say it tastes for a smoked fish. If you're not eating it smoked, in my opinion, there is no comparison to other fish. It's a, for a lot of people, it's an acquired taste.
All right. We're talking with Jim Pat, who grew up on Lake Winnebago and has been spearfishing for almost 50 years. And there's room for you in our conversation here on Wisconsin Weekend about sturgeon spearfishing. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let us know what your favorite part of sturgeon fishing is. Are you a longtime fisher, or have you just begun? Maybe you've gotten a license, but you've never had a big catch. Tell us about it. Share it with us here on the Ideas Network. You can also tell us what your favorite way to cook sturgeon is, what your family recipes and rituals are. It's 800-642-1234. Jim, help us understand what spearfishing really involves. What are the steps we have to take to get out there and have access to these fish?
Well, number one, you have to make sure the ice is safe. That's the big thing. But you would need a shanty, of course, and many people build their own. A few are manufactured and purchased. Shanty, you need a spear, a gaff hook, and a way to get your shanty out on the fish. On good ice years, you can pull it out with your vehicle, and you need to either hire someone to cut you a hole, or you have to have your own saw to cut a hole. And that whole process, once you get out there, you pick your area. And there is really no science in that. You know where the so-called worm beds are. That's the lake fly larva. There are spots where there are a lot more of those, and that's what the fish likes to eat. So if you can find those, cut your hole, get your shanty over it. You also have to bank around it with some snow to keep air from going through and to keep the light out. Get all set up, get some kind of decoy, and pretty much wait.
Oh, the waiting would be tough for me. How big of a hole do you have to cut? Because this isn't like regular ice fishing as we know it, where the hole can be relatively small and you drop the line through and then you reel the fish in. I mean, you have to have some sort of flexibility there, right, when you're using a spear.
Yes, you have to have a little larger hole, that's for sure. Our smallest hole in one of our shanties is probably 3 feet by 5 feet. There are other shanties that are 2.5 by 4. That is probably the smallest hole I know of. And I know of people that have, they cut two holes. They have a longer shanty and they have cut a hole on either end of that shanty. So two people can spear.
Do you ever worry, though, that with holes that are that big in the ice, that it makes it more dangerous because you're physically involved, you're closer to the water than when you're using a line? It seems like that could present some challenges.
It can present some challenges. You have to make sure you don't fall in the hole. That's
right?
One thing. And I know someone who did fall in a hole. They made it out.
Goodness.
But, yes, you never know. You have to, some people put a barrier across. Others, I'm sure, are tied off with a safety harness somehow, if you don't trust it that well. There are special chairs made that, let's say the chair is turned around, but the back of the chair has like a headrest on it, an armrest, and you can put that up to the hole and look over that, and then there's that barrier.
Sure. Yep.
You and the ice or the hole.
That makes sense. More sturgeon swim ahead on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. Jim, don't go anywhere. Jim Pat stays with us too. And we're looking for your experiences. Share your story. Are you going to participate in sturgeon spearing season? Are you worried the ice won't be thick enough for this year's season? Maybe the warm weather has forced you to change your usual plans. Perhaps you have a favorite part of sturgeon fishing. Maybe you've got a story about a big catch, or, you know, we'll take the stories about the ones that just got away years ago. Share that with us here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Wisconsin Weekend about sturgeon spearing here in Wisconsin. I'm Keely Boltina. It's the morning show, and we'll be back shortly here on the Ideas Network. It's Wisconsin Weekend, and we're spending the morning envisioning we're sitting on a frozen lake, staring at a big hole in the ice through the clear, calm water, trying to keep our energy up as the minutes tick by, anticipating that any moment a giant sturgeon could swim just within our reach. We're talking sturgeon spearing here on the morning show. I'm Keely Boltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent. That season starts tomorrow, and we want to hear from you. Have you speared a sturgeon before? What advice do you have for newcomers to the sport? How do you stay warm on the ice? Maybe you've never been near sturgeon season, but you go ice fishing regularly. What advice might you have for people who are headed out to Lake Winnebago? Or maybe you have some family traditions you'll be keeping alive this year as sturgeon season kicks off. We want to hear about them at 800-642-1234. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Jim Pat is our guest. He's been spearing sturgeon for nearly 5 decades, also leads the Southwest chapter of Sturgeon for Tomorrow. That's a fishing and conservation group that supports sturgeon in Wisconsin. And Jim, how hard is it to spear a sturgeon? This feels like a big endeavor.
It is a big endeavor. The actual spearing is not that hard. You just have to be accurate. And it's not like, say, a deer hunting where you see your deer coming or whatever. This is a small hole in a big lake and limited visibility. And when you see one, you only probably have 5 seconds. Maybe 10 at the most if the fish is moving slowly or stops. And it's quite exciting. It's a quick thing.
This feels like the extreme version of the concept of hurry up and wait. You sit there for hours staring at a giant hole, and then you have 5 to 10 seconds to act?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's quite an experience. I know myself, it was probably 6 years before I ever speared one. And some people are luckier than others, of course. I know people that have speared well over 30 years and have never gotten a sturgeon.
Is it because you don't see the sturgeon, or is it because when they do swim across the hole, your accuracy is off, or you weren't able to react in time? You know, split those hairs for us.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Some of it is you just didn't place your shanty in the right place, and a fish doesn't come through there. The other is there are misses, and there are, oh, geez, it was off to the side, and you didn't see it soon enough, and it's gone.
Mm. And it's just gone. So let's say we are successful, though, because we're very skilled people here. After we spear the fish, how difficult is it to pull it out of the water? What do you do?
Well, the bigger fish, of course, the harder it is, just like on hook and line, they pull harder. Your spear is attached to a rope, and you just kind of let it play out a little bit, tire up somewhat, and steadily pull it in. When you get it up close to the surface, You have a gaff hook, which most people know what that is, a rounded hook on the end, a heavy-duty one. And you would gaff the fish, and with the spear and the gaff hook in it, you would pull it out of the water and get it outside on the ice.
Jim, I understand you speared your first sturgeon in 1971, and I have to ask, what happened there? Tell us about it.
Oh, I'm trying to remember back that far.
just a couple of years.
Yes, the water was very clear that year, and this first fish was pretty close to me, actually. It was only about 6 feet down in the water. Came in. We had a decoy down, of course. It did not stop. But it was going next to the decoy, and it came from underneath me. And as I saw it, I grabbed the spear, and it was on its way out when the spear finally found its mark.
Wow. And I'm struck by the fact that you began the story about spearing the sturgeon with the fact that the water was clear. How critical is water quality?
That's very critical in this sport. On clear water years, you can generally figure on, Ryan Koenigs was on earlier and talked about the harvest cap, that you will make that harvest cap. And as I remember, that is roughly 5% of the population. And when you reach that cap, the season is over. And at times, on a clear water year, that can be only a week into the season. And dirty water years, like this is not a clear water year. In general, you would maybe see a sturgeon 7 feet down this year, 6 or 7 feet in 10 feet or more of water. There are probably isolated places where you can see better, but it's hard to find those.
We're talking to Jim Pat, who you'll find every February out on Lake Winnebago trying to spear a sturgeon. And there's room for you in this discussion at 800-642-1234. What's your favorite part of sturgeon fishing? Maybe your family has been doing this for decades. Maybe you are a Native American who feels a deep connection to sturgeon fishing. Or perhaps you've got a story about a big catch. We'll take your stories, whether we confirm them or not. You're welcome to share them at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Jim, Chris from Adams called but couldn't stay with us. Chris wants to know how they could get their hands on some sturgeon caviar. Is that a thing here in Wisconsin?
That is a thing in Wisconsin, yes. The caviar comes from what they call a black egg fish. That is eggs that are ripe and ready to hatch this coming year. There are people around the lake that know how to process the caviar. You could take it to one of them, ask around at generally your local registration stations. I shouldn't say station, but they're usually at a access point to the lake. And there are bars or supper clubs or some business there that would possibly know someone that does this. You cannot sell this. And you can't barter, you can't do anything with this caviar. The people that make it are happy to do it. And in general, someone will thank them by giving them some caviar back. Not that they have to, that's not part of it, but that's how you would get your caviar.
And why is it illegal to sell the eggs or the flesh of lake sturgeon in Wisconsin?
Well, as with deer or pheasant or anything, it's a game animal. And you try to protect it. If you start selling it, people would want more, and that probably would lead to more poaching.
Is poaching a problem here in Wisconsin? We heard Ryan Koenig earlier say it used to be a really big problem, and now it's really volunteers and people who are working to protect the animal because they respect it and see it as part of the culture there, who have really stepped up to try to keep that away. Is poaching still an issue?
I wouldn't say an issue as much as we're sure it's done yet, but it has... definitely been cut way back from what it was back in the, through the 20th century, all the way up until, I would say, 5 to 10 years after the Sturgeon Guard program was started. There were people that thought it was their right to take sturgeon. Their grandfather did it, their father did it, and they're going to do it too. But that culture has changed. People upriver have found out that viewing a sturgeon when they spawn in the spring is a financial boon for them up in those areas.
Hmm.
And that has changed the culture there.
Your organization, Sturgeon for Tomorrow, began working with the DNR in the 70s to help the fish population grow. Why have restoration efforts in Wisconsin been more effective, especially compared to other parts of the world?
Well, I think part of it is that we do have this fishery in Wisconsin, and people throughout the 20th century here have speared them, and they that is part of their culture, too, and they want to see the fish protected. As you said, Sturgeon for Tomorrow has helped out, and together with the DNR, we found a way to raise sturgeon in a hatchery setting, and sturgeon have spread around Wisconsin, and these eggs from our Wolf River or Lake Winnebago fish have gone to other states also and helped reestablish populations there.
And is this a local tradition, this sturgeon spearing, or are people coming from all over the country to fish here?
People come from all over the country. Not in large numbers, of course. I think it's maybe, you would have to ask Ryan Koenig. I want to say...
yeah, they've given out maybe, about, or they've doled out about 12,000 permits.
Yes, permits, but the number of people from out of state, I would say, is... quite low.
Okay.
1% maybe.
Wow.
Maybe 2%. I'm not sure on that.
Mm-hmm. But so we have the tradition here, but we also see people who have a connection or appreciate the sport or want their chance coming to Wisconsin to experience this for, a few days, really.
Yes, people can come. I know people from our local access point on the lake. They rent out shanties every year, and people have the opportunity to come, and they don't have to have all the gear. They can rent one of these shanties.
Mm, so then it's an experience for some people, and there's also an economic development side to sturgeon spearing season that can, help support these communities.
Oh, definitely. Around the Lake Winnebago system, it's I don't know the exact figure, but it's in the millions of dollars that are spent over this.
Jim Pat is talking with us about all things sturgeon spearing. Still time for you in this conversation. What spearfishing story do you want Wisconsin to hear? Give us a call now at 800-642-1234. Wisconsin Weekend is not over yet here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. Join us here on the Ideas Network.
A winter storm watch for portions of central southwest and south central Wisconsin will be in effect on Sunday. For today, cloudy in the south with highs around 30, snow showers for central and northern Wisconsin with highs in the 20s. Saturday, partly sunny, highs in the 20s. Sunday, a wintry mix for the south, heavy snow in the storm watch area, a little snow in the north, highs ranging from the mid-30s in the south to the mid-20s in the rest of the state. And on Monday, a few flurries in the north, otherwise sunny skies.
Coming up on The Morning Show, we'll gauge Wisconsin's waterways and the efforts underway to keep them clean. We'll also talk tax cuts with a state legislator, and we'll find out about quarantines, all after 7, on the Ideas Network.
I'm David Folkenflik. Coming up on the next On Point, a week drenched in history. Trump acquitted by the Senate, but not before Mitt Romney votes to convict and remove his fellow Republican. And we'll review confusion in the Iowa caucuses, the State of the Union, coronavirus, and more. Plus, we'll talk about the creation of the classic 1974 film Chinatown. That's coming up on the next On Point, this morning at 9 on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from UW-Madison Professional Degrees and Certificates, offering more than 80 graduate-level programs, including online and evening options. go.wisc.edu/pro. Your future, your way. Support also comes from Gunderson Funeral Homes and Cremation Care, dedicated to compassionate life celebrations and green burials, keeping in mind cultural backgrounds and lifestyles. Pre-planning services in person or at GundersonFH.com.
It's the morning show here on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina. Thank you for joining us for Wisconsin Weekend. We're talking about how the sturgeon spearing season begins tomorrow. And we should note, it does have a specific end. The season is over after 16 days or when a certain number of sturgeon are harvested. Fear not, though. The camaraderie does not stop with the fishing season. There's even a sturgeon banquet on March 7th in Stockbridge, Wisconsin, that includes an award ceremony and a chance to tell your spearing story with other fans of this time-honored tradition. We're talking about it here on The Morning Show. Our guest is Jim Pat. He's a longtime sturgeon spearer, and he leads a fishing and conservation group. And Jim, we've talked about some strategies that you have for maybe picking a spot, although there certainly isn't a science for it. I do have to ask if you have a specific place where you plan to be this weekend.
We do. We have a traditional area we like to be in. It's on the south central part of Lake Winnebago. It's generally anywhere in between a couple of roads, anywhere between Cemetery Road and the county line is where we'd like to go. But every group has their spot. We like to spear in a little bit shallower water, say maybe 10 feet, where other people like deeper water. It's interesting to hear all the different strategies people have.
And I wonder, though, you've cut this giant hole, you've set up the shanty, you've put all of the snow around it. Do you ever just go, this is not working for us, and decide to move?
Yes, that does happen.
What pushes you to that point? Because I feel like at that point you've invested a lot of time and effort into this spot.
We have, but at times the water can get very dirty. And in the general area, there just aren't sturgeon. People aren't getting sturgeon. So you change your strategy. You talk to different people. And if there's an area that is producing more sturgeon, if it's not too far away, of course, I wouldn't move the whole length of the lake, that's for sure. But within, say, several miles, we would move to there.
Are you concerned at all about ice cover this year?
Yes, I am. I was on the lake yesterday, and I'm sure anyone that's gone on the lake, maybe you have or not, there are things called pressure ridges, or cracks we call them, where the ice works. And you, on good years, you need a bridge to get across those with a vehicle. And this year, there are some isolated areas where vehicles are going on the ice. But anything south here in Lake Winnebago, it's all ATVs and UTVs. And there are no bridges. So you have to be very careful on these pressure ridges or cracks that you pick a good place to go across or try to bridges with something of your own making to get across.
You've been really great about detailing us for us what spearfishing really involves. And my takeaway, you know, you're standing around on the ice for a long time, staring into the water for hours for a fish that may or may not show up. So why do you keep doing it? And what's your strategy to, like, be ready?
As you said, it's a lot of camaraderie. Ours is mostly family. We have a few other good friends that go with us. And usually you're sitting with someone else. You're not there by yourself. Got some music playing, and you just have a good conversation. It's a quiet time. And sometimes it is hard to keep staring at the hole. That's for sure.
Because you don't want to miss anything.
No, that's the thing. If you look up, And that has happened to people. You look up and you look back down and there's a tail going out of your hole. You know,
that is heartbreaking.
It is. You stretch a little bit or whatever, possibly go to, if you have something to eat for your lunch, you might be making that on a stove or something. You reach back and it can be over quickly.
All right. Attention, music, conversation, snacks. I think we can handle this, Jim.
It's a good time. And we have, after the season, on opening day, we always have a little get-together on shore. The family comes out, a few dishes to pass, and we have a good afternoon.
Jim, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. We really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. It's been a great time for me also.
Thanks, Jim. Jim Pad is the president of the Southwest Chapter of Sturgeon for Tomorrow. That's a fishing and conservation group that's helped sturgeon thrive in Wisconsin. Jim's been spearing sturgeon for nearly 50 years. And a reminder, you need a permit to spear sturgeon. The season starts tomorrow, Saturday, February 8th at 7 o'clock in the morning. Now it's time for Wisconsin Live. Here's former host and executive producer Erica Janik.
To sell its phonographic cabinets, a Grafton furniture business decided to start a record label. It became one of the leading producers of blues records in the 1920s and made pioneering recordings of some of the nation's great musicians. Sergio Gonzalez tells us the story of Paramount Records as part of Wisconsin 101.
The first time we heard about this was because Jack White's production company had just put out this huge collection of Paramount records. And so the first thing I heard was not the blues music. It was some of this quote-unquote ethnic music of Southern and Eastern European. The first time I heard it, I was like, this is not good. What is this? Like, why would people listen to this? You know, it didn't sound like anything special or particular. And it wasn't until you get to the blues that you really understood what made Paramount special. It was strictly a money-making project. So the Wisconsin Chair Company was founded in the 1880s, and they were really successful in Port Washington creating things like beds and cabinets. But with the introduction of phonographs in the late 19th and early 20th century, they decided to jump into that business. And they were making phonographic cabinets for corporations like the Edison Company. And they got to thinking, well, if we're making these phonographic cabinets, why don't we just start making some music as well? So they had purchased two different subsidiaries that had kind of ventured into the blues market, so Puritan Records and the New York Recording Laboratories. And really the thing that pushed them into the blues market was the hiring of J. Mayo Williams. He was a guy who was living in Chicago, and he had actually contacted this company and asked if he could be a talent recruiter for them. And he had a very special talent of finding unknown artists in the South and then bringing up to Chicago and eventually all the way up to Wisconsin to record music. So some of the big recorders, you had Louis Armstrong, Jelly Roll Morton, Ethel Waters, and Ma Rainey. But the big find for J. Mayo Williams is Blind Lemon Jefferson. The Grafton plant was made specifically to make cheap music. Artists would come all the way up from the South, stop in Grafton, and then because of the sundown laws in Grafton, would have to leave the city as African-American artists and head back to Milwaukee to find a place to stay. Paramount blew up in the 1920s, up until basically the Great Depression, where the entire music industry collapsed. At its height, the Wisconsin Chair Company employed one-sixth of all workers in Ozaukee County, and so they were a touchstone organization within the community. And so I would imagine a lot of people understood that company kind of being instrumental to, you know, their family's well-being. Like a lot of companies, Paramount Records did not treat their talent with a lot of respect, and specifically their black artists. They were paid considerably less than the rest of their artists on their slates. And so records show that 9 out of 10 Paramount recording artists never received any royalties from their music, and a lot of them were swindled out of the copyrights on their songs. And so they would write these fantastic songs, and Paramount would hold the rights to them, and the artists would never see really any profit off of that. Paramount records to this day are really hard to find because they were produced on these cheap wax masters that were made for immediate production but not made to last very long. And so people who purchased Paramount records knew that they were going to get great music but not very good quality. I think the amazing story about Paramount is that we're talking about one of the most important companies in the creation of blues music in the 1920s and early 1930s. And it was based here in Wisconsin, in a place that people wouldn't even think about.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life on our website, wisconsinlife.org, and on Facebook. I'm Erica Janik.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.
Oh, that must be the bad bug. You know a chin chin bites that hard. Asked my baby for 50 cents. She said lemon ain't a child in the yard.